Hello, welcome to Bagel Tech Late As Ever, the latest ever show from the Bagel Tech Network, where we're talking the week in technology. A fantastic evening of tech talk is about to start. We've had loads of fun already with Eric pretending to be James's body, but you'll see that if you look at the clip art, so there we go. Our super panel is joining us from far and wide, from Luton, James Hart.
That's not far, so it must be wide.
Our resident knackered travelling man. How's it been, mate?
I'm absolutely exhausted because I went to Salford again this week for the radio festival. And although there were some very, very kind of high up people in radio, I didn't get to speak to any.
Hang on, if you say you've been to a radio festival, that just makes me think you got pissed.
I did, but that's only the point.
It's a radio festival sounds like Glastonbury, mate, not work.
No, this was fairly high level, basically decrying the fact that radio doesn't get enough investment and nobody really likes it anymore, except they do. Death of local radio and all that business. But that's that's for another podcast that you don't do. Bagel Tech Wireless.
Why don't you do it for us, mate?
Well, is it because, just quickly, James, is it because of the same problem we have over here in the States that it's all become centralized and there's no more local playlists and local DJs? It's all just like, you know, Clear Channel then just decrees it, and then it's same every radio station across the country playing the same playlist?
The temptation is to do that because it costs less money.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of Heart FM used to have complete unique programming for Birmingham.
And therefore, if they can, for example,
And London, now they've only got two shows that are separate. I think the drive time show is separate and the breakfast show is separate, and that's it.
Separate. So, yeah. And that's the way to save money, because if you only have to employ one presenter...
Chat room's already got a title for your new show, James. Bagel Tech Crystal Set. And you have to put the earpiece in a large souffle bowl or trifle
absolutely
bowl to get, so you can hear it. Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
Next to him, from PC Pro Magazine, the bodybuilder Barry Collins.
This is the least appropriate. I love this camera. If it makes me look like a bodybuilder.
iPad too. Yes. Huzzah.
The last time I went in the gym was at least 15 years ago.
Good lad. You're in good company, at least. So, we haven't seen you for a month. How you been?
I'm all right. Yeah, not too bad. Very busy, but not too bad.
Good. And the magazine, doing well?
Magazine's doing very well, yeah.
Got anything nice, interesting due this month? Because you've got to be due to publish in the next sort of 10 days.
Yeah, there's one out this time next week. In fact, next Thursday, there's a new one out. But the one on sale at the moment's with a Windows 8 on the cover, and that's been doing really well. A lot of interest in Windows 8, which is good.
Do you just happen chance along at this podcast the week before you publish, or is it designed? Because you say no every time I ask, and then all of a sudden, the week before you publish, you say yes.
Well, you know, it's because I'm always busy in the rest of the weeks.
If I'm being used, it's okay, I'm fine with it. I just... Go and buy PC Pro Magazine, because it's fantastic. There we go.
Yes.
Beneath him, we got Guy Fawkes. Steve Neighbour, how you doing, man? You are awesome, mate. The effort you made for the F1 show on Monday for Halloween, and then tonight you've come as Guy Fawkes. You are superb.
Well, I think we went through about 15 costumes on the F1 night for the Spanish Grand Prix.
We heard.
So boring anyway. It needed a bit more entertainment. So I'm happy to do that. I've been to... I've got some... small explosives, so I'm heading down to Westminster later.
That's not the kind of thing you joke about. That's like saying bomb on a plane, dude.
I wouldn't tweet that, no. Eric, do you know who Guy Fawkes is?
Only that there's a day and a mask named after him.
Okay.
A day and a mask?
Yep.
That sounds like a measurement of time. How long do you have to wait? Oh, a day and a mask. Well, he's a guy that tried to blow up gunpowder plot, blow up James the first,
yep.
Second, first.
There
you go. And that's, has there been a James the second, James?
Must I don't believe been. So.
Well, okay.
Is that a king or a pope?
That was a king.
Okay.
By that point, we'd kind of really got rid of the pope. But that's a whole different story. In fact, the two monarchs before we got rid of the Pope. There we go. And the ill-educated American that's joining us from the far side of the pond and 3,000 miles of land is Eric Lanigan. How you doing, bud?
And while we're already piling it on, I'm going to even profess an even more ignorance here. Do you guys really have Halloween over there?
Yeah.
Like, is it really like a big deal? Do you go trick? Do the kids go trick or treating and everything?
It's kind
it's
of been the last.
It used to be
20 years, perhaps. In the last 20 years ago, it was you had. I mean, my mum and dad used to have a Halloween barbecue when I was a kid, and people used to come around, and we used to just have steaks outside and that kind of stuff. But there was no fireworks or anything because it was just Halloween, and there was pumpkin soup. But
that steak is in the meat rather than the steak.
Yeah, yeah, not through the heart.
But it occurred to me the other day. I don't actually know where Halloween came from. I think it was an American invention, but I don't really know.
No, it's All Hallows Eve.
Yes, it's the day before All Saints Day.
There you go.
Oh, okay. So there's actually a reason behind it. Okay, see, I don't know these things.
So you need to Google All Hallows Eve. Wikipedia it, mate.
But the trick-or-treating then, the dressing up and trick-or-treating, that's where is that from?
Well, we can blame the Americans for that.
It's a watershed of summer and ghostliness going into the Saints Days. So it's...
The Christian Church often hijacked pagan festivals to celebrate its religious ones. I mean, Christmas actually is at the heart of winter. It's almost at the winter solstice, and Halloween is just before Halloween. I think is probably the autumn. What's it called? What's it, the days and nights are the same length? Whatever it's called. Anyway, the clocks.
No, it's
go
not
back
an equinox.
It's not the equinox. It's when the clocks go back anyway, yeah. And that's a pagan festival. Probably.
The Feast of Daylight Savings Time.
That's it, yes.
We got Andy Warholer in the chat room. Cool. He says, bing it. I
was going to go and bring my Halloween. My son had a Halloween costume that he wore on Monday, and I could go up and get it, but I was having so much trouble with my video, I didn't go and get it. So maybe I'll save that till next week.
When it's not Halloween.
When it's not even Guy Fawkes Night. No.
At least Steve's timing's been perfect.
True. Thank you. Well done, Steve.
We need Eric. We need to do a transatlantic podcast with you and me, just for 10 minutes, discussing a subject. With me going, why on earth do you do that? And then you doing the same for the British topic. We just pick one topic each week. We're going to do that.
Like one of them's pants.
Yeah.
It is funny because it's like the tech and everything. We're all following the same tech news and the same world news, but it's like you find these little things. Where it's like, whoa, that's different over there. What?
Turkey.
Like it's the little things that get you.
Now, let me get this straight. Do you have a Monday?
No, we don't.
No,
we have four Tuesdays.
Oh, there's a joke about that followed by a weekend, but I can't say it because we're a clean podcast. The Week in Technology, what's been happening? Facebook has given out its trusted friends feature, which, based on the fact it's Mark Zuckerberg, he's the last friend you'd ever trust with anything, I would have thought. Kinect has pushed out the special commercial SDK. It's going to be out there in 2012 and available. And that really could be as high as the sky. I mean, there's so much could happen with that. We could talk about that a little bit today. I think that's quite an exciting one. We found out that Bill Gates was the person that put the kibosh on Microsoft's courier plans. And he had an allergic reaction, unquote. And he was concerned that they were going for creatives and not business. They measured 4 gigabytes of data. And 4 gigabytes of data actually has a mass. And it's the same mass as a single virus. And lastly, but not by any means leastly, if that's a word, NASA wants to make a tractor beam. They've got no budget, but they're going to make a tractor beam. Is that really doable?
No.
That can't be right. Is it April 1st? No, it was November 1st it was issued, so there's obviously a...
No, so you read it wrong. The press interpreted it wrong. What they meant was they wanted to put a laser beam on a tractor.
Ah. There we go.
See, just a simple... Just flip it around, that's all. Just a simple miscommunication.
It's quite interesting because Obama absolutely crucified them and he's the one that needs traction in the polls. There we go. Where should we start? You had a point, Eric, about Steve Jobs' biography.
I did.
Just want to chit-chat around. Who's hands up? I know you're in a very select club, aren't you, Barry? You put down journos who haven't read Steve Jobs' biography yet.
Yeah, it's completely passing by, I've got to say. I just seen many highlights of it in the press that it's like watching Match of the Day and seeing all the goals beforehand. I sort of lost interest.
Right, okay. I mean, I've got to say, I would like to have been in the club, apart from the fact I wasn't available as a journalist. But in terms of not having read it, I was there up until yesterday. And then yesterday when I drove up to York, I thought, no, I've got to take some. And I bought it and took it. So, and I've enjoyed it. I'm 7 hours in, so 30-hour book.
It's a big book.
Yeah. But I don't get the pictures. Have you got the hard copy book, Eric?
No, I got the Kindle.
No pictures in the Kindle either, though.
No, there are. There are.
All right, good.
I think probably the same amount, but they're just smaller and black and white.
Okay. Everyone else read it, James?
I can't read.
Okay.
Oh, no. Good answer. If it was available in a Twitter feed, I think I'd probably manage it, but it does sound a little bit long.
Well, I might have the biography for you, James.
140 characters a time for 30 hours.
For you, because I did condense a little bit of that biography into my Twitter stream. I started,
which
I started
is at the end, twitter.com/Eric Lanigan.
Yes, thank you. I start with a K. I started at the end and I skipped around I saved the Pixar stuff to last. I haven't even gotten there yet, but I've been skipping around. And I just recently got to through the more of the beginning stuff. And I have to say, I don't know if this is a criticism of the biography as a literary criticism, as maybe it wasn't. Maybe it didn't quite weave the narrative properly or give Steve Jobs due consideration, or maybe this is a legitimate criticism of Steve Jobs, the historical figure and the human who lived a rough life with this stuff. But it seems like the pre-1997 years of Steve Jobs were just marked and characterized by theft, cheating, lying, and utter failure. I mean, I say this not as a person who always sought to beat up on Steve Jobs, quite the opposite. I always loved watching the keynotes, found him a fascinating person. I read biographies even as a young kid before anyone else, before that became a popular thing, knew my Apple history. And yet, having read this biography, if his biography is really to be believed, that Mac story is the complete story that gives due consideration to Steve Jobs, then I would say that this is how I would summarize Steve's only contribution to the Macintosh, the original Macintosh. Seeking revenge for being kicked out of his own project, Steve starts a competing project to undercut that project's price and ship date. He does this by stealing a brilliant man's pet project, kicking him out, and forcing a group of unwilling people to work around the clock under slavish conditions to put ideas he stole from Xerox into a box too small to be practical, and then takes all the credit. Oh, yeah, and he added variable width fonts. Am I wrong, or is the biography...
I think that's kind of harsh.
Okay.
I mean, if you look at the way that the way the book plays out, his early part with Jobs, I mean, he's a shyster. There's no question of it. I mean, he stole the bonus off of Woz for the creation of the Atari game Breakout when Woz had done all the work reducing the number of chips in it and stuff. So there's no question he's got a very negative side associated. I mean, I don't think he comes across well in the book, particularly about the abandonment thing with his daughter. But the key thing that Jobs does he takes the great idea that Woz has and he turns it into something that can be sold. And he took everything that, I can't remember the guy's name, is it Resnick?
Who?
The guy that came up with the idea of the Macintosh and picked the title and all that kind of stuff.
Jeff Raskin.
Raskin, yeah. And he took everything that Raskin came out with that did flop, because Raskin went away and made the Canon Cat or whatever it was, and it died a complete and utter death. The phenomenon that he'd come up with was not sellable, was not functional. And the Xerox stuff, you know, they showed you this thing, but Xerox hadn't got a clue what they got. They hadn't got any idea of taking it to market. There were copier guys who were laced with a fantastic piece of technology they couldn't do anything with. And Jobs took it and he built on it and he made it commercially viable and he put a lot of extra stuff into it.
Well, and therein lies my disillusionment now, my newfound disillusionment, because it seems to me like whenever the people were cheering and those 5-minute standing ovations that you hear about from the Macintosh introduction seemed to be because people didn't know that was from Xerox. They hadn't seen Xerox Park. Steve Jobs did, and the Mac team did.
I don't think it was from Xerox. I think the idea that they got from Xerox was just a graphical interface and nothing more.
Well, that was a pretty big idea.
But they made it work, and then they did the overlaying of the windows, and then they worked out this idea of region coding, and then they came out with the idea of how to draw circles quickly without having to use Pi, which consumed too much processing and that kind of stuff. And the whole team, I mean, the way that the team reports how they felt about him was that they felt that he pushed them to excellence, not more than that, although they hated it while it was going on.
And I have two responses to that, too. The first is that I think that there were some brilliant insights made. And if you look at folklore.org, which is that project, sort of like a wiki, but written only by the people who made the original Macintosh, folklore.org, Andy Hertzfeld, Bill Atkinson, those guys have some fascinating stories, which I've read over the years. The team was brilliant people, very insightful. They made some amazing contributions to computing. Were those Steve Jobs' contributions? I don't know. The book makes it, the biography makes it sound like Steve's only contribution was to tell them, you're going to stay up until you finish this, no sleep for you. That's really the motivational force?
People will put up with a lot of crap if they believe in the product or they're working for something brilliant. You see it all the time in the media as well, you know, and newspapers are very much like that. You know, everybody really hates the atmosphere in the place, but they think they're working at the pinnacle of their career on something that's worthwhile. And so, you know, but it takes someone to drive those organizations. And I think that's what he did.
Yeah.
The good thing about the book for me is that if you look at every other Apple product or marketing thing, everything's perfect on that marketing and on that product when it's released. It is the they release it as the perfect thing. They market it as that. The book doesn't do that. The book actually gives a realistic picture of somebody who was actually a nightmare to work with and extremely personally hard. And I like the fact that the book has got both sides of his achievements and also his problems as well.
Now, I've never read the biography of Walt Disney, but I imagine very much it's a similar thing where you've got this amazing gloss, this wonderful thing where Disney conjures up what images of positivity, but in the background you've got people who are probably not having the best of times. And I think it's kind of that thing where people love what is presented to them, but as soon as you sort of pick up the little look under the rug, so to speak, you do see some of the harshness.
I guess a couple of differences there is that Disney didn't quite take, you know, he wasn't really, picture Steve Jobs on the cover of those early Macworld covers and everything, you know, the father of the Macintosh, as if it were all him. And you rarely ever saw the team being praised, even though it seems like it was mostly them. And the Mac, I think when people were going nuts at that presentation, when the Mac talked and everything, I think that was almost more of, they were cheering because they had stolen fire from who stole fire from the gods, the Greeks, I don't know. But they stole fire, brought it down to
from
them.
The Greeks,
and
yeah.
That was from Xerox. And the crowd had not seen that before. They didn't know where those original ideas came from. Also, talking about Woz, the story about Woz is even sadder than we ever knew. First of all, at Atari, not only did he fail to give Woz the bonus, but he lied to him and said that he had to stay up for four nights straight when in reality there was no such deadline. Steve had he was going on vacation to India, or he was going on some trip and he wanted to get out of there. That's the reason he made Woz work overtime like that without sleep, and then Woz got very sick as a result. Then he screwed him up on the bonus that Woz earned by putting fewer chips into the design. Then later on with the Apple II, or with the Apple I even, the response, and you said this a few minutes ago too. You said, well, if Steve hadn't have been there, Woz's designs would not have been turned into a product. Well, Woz wanted to give them away free. He didn't want to sell them. Woz was dragged kicking and screaming into making that into a business. He just wanted to share that knowledge with the world. And he happily would have designed that Apple II, even if he knew it was only him in his bedroom ever going to see the thing. That's just how Woz was. And then Steve later criticized Wozniak later in life, like soon before he died. He told Isaacson in an interview, he said something like, well, Woz never worked a day in his life after 1978. He didn't do anything. It's like, geez. And then later in life in the 80s, when Woz left Apple, possibly because he was just so disillusioned by what Steve put him through and said those things and started competing projects to compete with his Apple II just for his own ego. Then he went off to do a universal remote control. Steve goes to that place who designed it, the look of the remote control, cancels it, sabotages Woz's product.
Hang on a second. Because my understanding of that story is Steve Wozniak hired a hotel room in Hawaii and was going to go and sit and write code for this new universal remote control. And he sat there for 10 months and never wrote a single line of code. He was just eating burgers in the room and going off and swanning off. And don't forget as well that Steve Wozniak ran half a dozen music festivals afterwards that he paid for out of his own money. All of that was him, this flight of fancy that he had. And he got this egalitarian idea of giving money away and that kind of thing. But I mean, he'd have been a street bum on the corner giving away, you know, looking for quarters now if it hadn't been for Steve Jobs. So I think Steve Jobs' comment there about Woz hasn't done a day's work since 1975 is probably not a million miles away.
Well, I think that speaks to the different ethics of the people. I think the way Steve talked about, you know, Zen and not caring about money and material goods and things, that would be the person who's saying those things that you would expect to go off and teach third graders or whatever Woz did. Yeah. So Woz was definitely working. He just wasn't making money like a businessman. And I think that's the difference. And Steve just had no respect for that. Steve felt that it was the person who steals the fire and brings it to the masses that deserves all the praise. And the person who thought of the idea doesn't deserve anything. That's why it's so hypocritical to look years later and see why his hatred of Android, because they, quote, stole his ideas.
Except the fact that when Apple went public, Woz got all of his fair share. And Woz gave most of it away.
Well, yeah, because Woz truly didn't care about the money.
Yeah, but I don't think Steve Jobs did, to be honest. I think Steve Jobs saw the money as a means to an end. He wanted to create perfection and perfect products and really cool stuff. And if he wanted to do that, he wasn't going to be able to do it out of a garage in Palo Alto. He was going to have to do it from a business. So he had to make a business to make the perfect product. But if you look at the Mac, you know, the bit that got me was when he called everyone around and he made them sign a piece of paper and said, great artists sign their work. And he made every person in the team sign it, including himself. And on every single one of those Mac 2Es, they had on the inside the signature of the artisans who'd made it, which I thought was kind of cool.
Will it make a good film?
No, probably not, actually. Who's going to play Steve Jobs?
I was just about to ask that. I can't imagine.
Jeffrey Rush.
Who's that?
Exactly. Don't start.
Rush.
Ubuntu is coming to phones and tablets, allegedly. Now, I'm a bit disappointed because, and I don't know if this is why Sarah's sick this evening, so get well soon, Mrs. Please, and best wishes from us all. I hope you're feeling better. But I just want to make sure that you didn't throw a sickie because I asked you to be the oracle on this story. The Ubuntu Developer Summit, old Shuttleworth, says that, as far as he's concerned, phones and tablets should be carrying Ubuntu, and it will definitely be coming in the first half of 2012. What do we think?
I think he said it's a two-year project. It's 2 years away. We actually spoke to him
earlier
this week. But, yeah, it's a bit further away than that.
There's no time scale on this apart from the 2012 comment.
Well, he said to us 2 years. It's a two-year thing. That it will definitely be out in the 2013, by the end of 2013, 2014, which means just too late. I think the biggest problem, I think they'll be able to do an OS and make it lovely and presentable, but they're going to have two huge problems. One is that they'll be miles behind in the app market by then, that you're going to have, you know, iOS, Android, even possibly Windows 8, well entrenched for a couple of years, and the market needs no more than two or three app stores at the very best. And I think their second problem is getting it pre-installed on hardware, because it's not like a PC. You can't just go and install, by and large, an operating system on a smartphone or a tablet. And getting the support from the manufacturers for Ubuntu with no real money behind it, no, you know, they can't offer a handset manufacturer a few million quid like Microsoft did with Nokia to make it work, I think it's going to have a very, very tough time.
Well, according to the story I read, though, Barry, they've already been talking to manufacturers for the last 18 months about integration. So the fact that it's another 2 years away now seems kind of silly if they've been already talking to about integration for 18 months.
Yeah. Of course, go on.
Sorry.
I was going to say the groundwork's been done with Linux already, because as Android's based on a Linux backend. It's just the Ubuntu smartness and the user experience I think they need to work on.
I don't think that's their big issue. I think the problem, I mean, the only possible ray of light for them is if Android apps can be ported to Ubuntu because they share the same kernel, effectively. I don't know if that's technically feasible, but if they can run Android apps, that's a big head start for them. But I still think they're going to have a hell of a job getting it pre-installed, even if they are talking to manufacturers, because talking is one thing, getting actual commercial deals is another biggie.
Yeah.
James, they've proved that already with the desktop market. They still haven't made any progress, even though Ubuntu 11 Eric Jobby is really beautiful, very quick. You don't need as much memory as you do for certainly Vista, but Windows 7. It is a really nice looking operating system, but people don't gravitate to it. In fact, most people still haven't heard of it.
But I think that, I mean, it's Ubuntu's problem, the fact that it doesn't run seamlessly. You know, go back to your Apple ethic, if you like, again. You know, one of the things that I think that came through from the Mac expediting or the Mac issue in the Jobs book is the fact that that's when the reputation of Mac just working started, because they've pored over this thing for so long and quality tested it to the nth degree because he wanted this thing that was just pure perfection. And the problem that Ubuntu's got is that you stick it on computers, it stalls very easily, it looks very nice, it runs very nice, but when you come down to the nitty gritty of integrating it into a wide ranging set of applications with hardware device drivers and that kind of stuff, it falls over like one of those sheep that you shout at and they fall over thing.
Don't know those.
I would love to see Linux, a true open source system, become the dominant operating system, especially one with a great graphic design as Ubuntu for tablets and phones. But I really don't think that's going to happen, not without a big corporate backer who's going to fund the development of that, because you can't leave that to the open source volunteers, because there's no hardware standardization. You can put Linux on a desktop machine because that hardware and the drivers and everything, like you said, still a lot of driver problems, but less so in the desktop machines, because that's more or less been standardized over the last 10 or so years. So you can pretty much put Linux on any desktop machine and expect it'll run well. Laptops, same thing, because again, standardized hardware. Phones, not standardized hardware. Lots of different chip manufacturers, lots of different chip architectures, ARM7, ARM8, ARM9, they all use different things, different sizes of RAM, very different graphics chips, different basebands, different everything. And then you have to consider the size. You have to optimize it to not run too hot, to use too much battery or overheat the device, to be just the right size and thinness and to work well with that display. And it just goes on and on and on. And I think it's because that's why it's so hard to buy an Android device, because you look at the specs and you can't just go, oh, 1.2 gigahertz is better than 1.0 gigahertz. It doesn't work that way, because it's all about not just the perfect concoction and mixture of the right hardware components, but then the software has to be so well optimized that it really, you can't compare phone to phone, but especially between operating systems like Windows Phone specs to Android specs to iPhone specs, you can't compare it on the hardware, because the optimization of the software is what's so crucial to make it work.
Can I throw one option at you?
Go ahead.
When netbooks started, and please correct me, but when netbooks started, I believe that some of the early ones on the netbooks were Linux and were the free software Ubuntu, etc. And then Windows kind of moved in. How about the iPads that we have now? They will develop in future, and there might be a new type of cheaper version of the of tablets that develop. So netbook type model that's then applied to tablets. What software is going to run on that cheaper version of a tablet? Ubuntu is pretty much perfect for that, because it's cheap and it can do the basic things that people need a tablet to do.
So Android's free.
Android equally is free. Yeah, I was just thinking that, you know. Yeah. The Indian tablet is running Android. And also Android gets you access to a bigger marketplace in terms of functionality and application. But I think that the thing with Ubuntu, you're saying about it installs very easily there, Eric, but it does. It installs and it processes data very easily. It's fine for that. But it's when you want to, if you want to use it for a creative end, it's a waste of time, utter waste of time. To a degree, in terms of application, it's still maybe not a geek's platform, but it's an educated amateur's platform.
When you say that about creative apps, are you referring to the lack of third-party software or the lack of driver support?
If you want anything creative in Ubuntu, you very quickly run out of options of things that you can be creative with once you've gone past the basic level. You know,
you're talking software, third-party software?
Yeah, you've got no high-end video stuff. You've got no high-end Photoshop-type stuff. Photoshop's not written for it. You've only got GIMP and that kind of thing that will run with it. You look at audio. I'm not aware of anything outside of, what's the free one?
Audacity.
There's nothing outside of Audacity that I can think that does high-end audio capture, and certainly you wouldn't do multi-layer editing like you get in Logic or Audition. For it, you know, there's just nothing out there for it, as far as I'm aware. But there is the other problem. You know, it's a unified statement in that if it is out there, I don't know about it. In which case, you know, you're wasting your time and effort. And who's going to write software for a free platform that is controlled by an open source community that they're totally reliant on being nice about it?
Right.
It does come down to the marketing to a great extent. It's the fact that if people...
Barry, make your point because James is gone.
I was going to say the only other hope is that HTML5 takes off. And if web apps are designed in HTML5, then it doesn't really matter what the underlying operating system is. As long as there's a browser in there, that they can run the apps. But I think the biggest weakness that you probably identified on Ubuntu software is the UI. The UI is great for the operating system itself, but once you start using the apps, it's all a bit ugly and clunky and a bit 1990s. And the UI is everything on tablet and smartphone apps. And I think, like I say, unless they can get hold of the Android market, or unless they can, you know, HTML5 apps really become the predominant way of coding web apps, then they're going to really struggle.
James is back.
Well, Barry, I agree with you very much about the HTML5 aspect. I think people who really want to get away from tightly controlled monopolistic platforms should become champions. Maybe even less Linux. Maybe put that on the back burner for now and just focus on HTML5, JavaScript, CSS, the web standards, so that every bit of software in a utopian future runs exactly the same on every platform, on your choice of platform and your choice of software and your choice of hardware.
And there are some absolutely fantastic online tools for doing...
Oh, book me. It's only when he talks.
It sounded like a good point too.
It did, yeah, for when you're doing... toilet first thing in the morning. He's gone. He's definitely gone. No, I mean, the other thing as well is that Linux traditionally has been very good. There goes the slickness again for the week.
No, I like it. We'll just have fill in the gaps like Mad Libs, but with
blankety blank. News. Yes, I'm back.
You'd have, so it's always the best thing about it is, and then you just fill in your own.
Now, there we go. It's back. Linux is traditionally a very good system for stock control processes, cash register, that kind of stuff, isn't it? There's an awful lot of that stuff is written in various versions and base and flavors of Linux.
Right. It's great for embedded systems because you don't have to. You don't have to train anybody on it. It's great. Linux is ideal for embedded systems, servers, things that have write once, big deployment with very customized software. Because as long as you're going to customize the hardware, like a cash register or a router, and then customize the software so that only the technicians ever need to learn it, then the choice of OS doesn't matter. When you're talking about third-party software like a Photoshop or a video editor or an email program, then you have to go with the incumbent, usually Windows and the lesser case Mac, because that's the one that people know how to work with. The end users.
I mean, is there a certain point here that if you can't get traction in the PC market, you're never going to get traction in the phones and tablet market? I mean, because, you know, that, I mean, I always see in my own mind, I always think of the phone and tablet market because of the apps element of it that drives the sales. As that's right, the hard edge, the wild west of the market. And you know, if you can sell an OS to the desktop, then you've got a chance of springboarding forwards. But Ubuntu, I mean, I don't know what their market share is, but it's got to be in the 1 or 2%, surely.
Yeah, it's people who don't want to buy an operating system.
No.
You can make the same argument about Apple, though. You know, how many years did they spend getting 5-10%, if they were lucky, of the market, and then when they cracked the smartphone and the tablet market. Their market share, you know, I think tablets is 75% last time I looked. So
just to catch you on that point then, Barry, you're going to put £20 of your own money on Ubuntu coming out with something that's as earth-shattering as the iPad or the iPhone?
No, I'm not. That's my point. I think that, as I said earlier, I think the ship sailed on tablets and smartphones to some degree. I think there's only an ever appetite for two or three OSs. I think they're already, iOS and Android are clearly embedded already. Windows has a vague chance if it catches on. I don't think there's a space for a fourth.
Well, you've also got things like the Chromebook, for example, and a load of online applications. I've just posted in the chat room. Aviary has got some amazing online tools. You don't need it. It's completely cross-platform. It's Android. It's Apple. It's PC. You can edit photos. You can edit audio on it, and it's completely web-based.
Have you ever used it with a photo larger than about 3 or 4 meg?
No, but my son really likes it, and I think actually for mid-range day-to-day stuff, I think it's quite good. I quite like it.
Which chat room did you post this link in?
I did. I posted it in the Bagel Tech chat room.
I've got an assignment out there for all the wannabe Steve Jobs out there. Take Ubuntu, build hardware around it, build phones, build tablets, build the best desktop and laptop systems, and then put it in stores, put it in shopping malls, build a community out of it, market the hell out of that. I think the smartest thing Apple ever did was make those Apple stores. Because in every town where you saw an Apple store spring up, you saw the people gravitate to it like iron fibers do to a magnet. I mean, it's because they told people, you're not alone. If you buy a Mac, you're not out there on your own. There's a support group. There's geniuses here to help you. There's other people like yourself. You can come in and chat. You can get training. There's a whole community here. If you buy a Mac, yes, you may be the only one on your block or you're in your company or in your family to own one, but you really aren't on your own because there's a large support network to help you to learn to get the most out of it. There's nothing like that for Linux. It's an adventure going off on an uncharted island. And that's with the biggest thing preventing adoption in my view.
So we're going to go shops. Down. Darling, I'm off down the Ubuntu store. Really? What have you got? I've got a one-to-one with an idiot.
I mean, there are shops in the high street that sell. There's a Virgin Media shop in our shopping centre, and I've got no idea what it's there for because you go in there and ask them a question. They go, "Oh, you'd have to call the customer service line for that." So stick a couple of Ubuntu PCs in there, and I think something.
I do have to qualify, James. I think the type of questions that you go in and ask may be slightly different from the average punter that comes in and says, "How much is one of them?"
That's true. But then what sort of questions are you going to ask an Ubuntu, not genius, grease monkey?
A grease monkey? Is that the new phrase for the Ubuntu store genius?
I think so, yeah.
Grease monkey. Oi, grease monkey, get over here. That's it. We need chat room. We need some phrases for the Ubuntu store.
Yeah, because they can't be geniuses. So what are they? They could be fanboys.
Enthusiasts,
dorks. Just go to the Ubuntu store. Talk to the Ubuntu dork.
The tech guys. No, I mean, because they're going to produce you're going to go in with a problem and say, "I can't get this piece of hardware to work with it," and they go, "Yeah, I know."
I feel your pain, man.
Yeah, at least we're cool though. Been a bit of a week for Google. They're promising greater transparency for targeted ads. Now, that's because they've had a bit of grief, haven't they, over targeted ads, especially with the fact that Siri's going to take over the world, according to Don McAllister.
Not Don.
Steve, come on, mate. You express your grief at this point.
Well, I have this theory that Siri is basically designed to be the death of Google, to stand on top of and take over Google, in that you go to your phone, you use Siri, and then Siri can determine whether it uses Google or Wolf of Manfa or whatever website. So that in 5 years' time, if Apple suddenly decides to turn off all of that information, getting it from Google, they can turn it on to whatever search engine they want. But they can also probably turn on the iAds onto it as well, so they can do the advertising directly on Siri. So Google are stuff because no one's going to Google anymore because everyone's talking to their phone or their computers. And
Don McAllister said that was his idea last week.
Yeah, came up with that and didn't even give any credit to somebody else. But anyway, no problem.
It's a Don Gate.
Yeah, Don Gate.
Don Gate. We're gonna challenge him with it when he comes back from Blog World.
He's completely Steve Jobbed it.
Yes, that's it. He's been reading Jobs' book. And there's a reality distortion field. Maybe you haven't got a clue what you're talking about. Of course it was his idea, not yours.
Yes, yes, Mr. Jobs.
So is Google, crapping itself, or is this something that's been in the pipeline for quite a while? Because, I mean, you're not going to pass ad preferences in 4 weeks, surely.
I think Facebook have responded as well in terms of the Google Plus, haven't they, with the friends thing. But
it's not Siri that's caused that or forced that.
No, I think they are worried. I think they've got to do something quickly to make sure people go to their website for the search.
I don't think Google's in any real danger on search. I mean, where else is Apple going to go for search? Bing?
Well, it's not.
Wolf of Manfa?
Wolf of Manfa's not a search engine. It's a knowledge. It can find is very, very limited.
Calculator.
No, but I think the problem that you've got, Barry, is that Siri is bypassing Google. It's not looking for stuff on Google because it's got preordained agreements with things like Yelp.com and that kind of stuff, where they're just going straight to where the information is. So you pick a certain type of something, and it will go there. What was the restaurant review chain thing that they bought?
Oh, yeah.
Yelp. It was Yelp. No, it wasn't Yelp.
Zagat.
So if you do anything about restaurants, they're never going to go to Google again now. They're not going to go to Yelp. They're just going to go straight to their own service of Zagat, and that's it. It's going to be there. If you look at the maps, it's never going to go to Google Maps again because they've got all of the stages now. They've got, is it Larissa this week? Can't remember the name. But they've bought the last of the parts in the puzzle that they needed to have a 3D map system within the iPhone. They're buying stuff that is taking away from everything that Google is doing, and it won't go to any search engine. It will just have its own departments of topic, and there'll be set topics that you'll say, right, I want restaurants, it goes there. You want phone service, it goes there. You get, and it just goes to specific areas, and they'll toss the odd one out for Google when it's I want a hooker in the local area. I don't know what, you know, something that's not something that they want to get into.
But and I imagine Amazon are going to do the same sort of thing as well.
What, look for hookers?
No.
Oh, sorry, right. My mistake.
They're going to have their own directories as well.
Well, you can see, but they've not procured anything to do that, though, James. Whereas if you look at Apple, they've procured all the infrastructure to bypass Google, true. Full stop.
But it's more than that as well, because it's got the GPS and it's on your phone. It knows your route to work. It knows what takeaway, well, knows what time you leave work, because you set reminders saying when I leave work. It knows the takeaways that you pass on the way home from work, so it can actually send you ads if it wants to at the right time when you're about to pass that takeaway on the way home. Whereas a Google search isn't that connected at the moment with their, so it's basically absorbing the information more effectively than we do.
I was going to say though, how long is it going to be before Google picks that up? Because the Android phone can easily do that. It's just a case of them plugging something in. But as you say, if they're going to say, no, our hands are clean, we're not going to do that kind of thing, then...
I think I agree with Barry in the fact that Google will still be a nexus for search, no question. Mm-hmm. But what Google is going to be losing is its shop window, because Google needs its browser and it needs integration with other browsers and default choices on those browsers for being the search engine. Well, if Siri becomes this thing that doesn't need the shop window, Google can still do all the searching it likes in the background, but the shop window has suddenly moved now, and Google are left with a pile of stock that they're trying to sell out of a warehouse instead of a high street location.
Well, it's worse than that, because people are going to constantly try and game the Google system, because the Google system is not created by, it's not curated by people.
It's, I have to say, that was really weird of the Google of the Android chief. I don't know what his name is. I think it was the bald one. It spoke at all things D and said that and just, you know, brutally made fun of Siri in a way that seemed incredibly short sighted. Where he's like, oh, I don't think people should be talking to their phones. Phones are to talk to other people. I mean, give me a break. What is, I guess they shouldn't be typing to their phones either. Typing into a Google search box, it should be two people. That's stupid. So why would he do that? Is that going to come out as just blatant, just callous lying and misdirection and just being weird, or defensively? Or does Google really fundamentally not believe in that, or do they really have another? I have to think they have a similar product on the horizon.
Because what's he going to say? Is he going to sit there and go, "Yeah, you're right. I'm cacking myself."
Well, there's voice search in Android. There's a lot of very similar functionality to Siri in Android. It just doesn't talk back to you. It doesn't have that same level of intelligence. But you can already, you know, speak commands, search commands into Android handsets.
My point was, he made himself either look like an idiot or a liar. Because I'm sure that Google has something like this in the works, and a personal assistant like this, because they already have great voice recognition. They've been working very hard on it for years. So if anyone can throw server power into something like this and speech recognition, it should be Google. I'm sure they're working on this. So it was just a weird way for him to respond.
It was quite strong what he said, Andy Rubin. I do not believe the phone should be an assistant. Your phone is a tool for communicating. You shouldn't be communicating with your phone. You should be communicating with somebody on the other side of the phone.
And Steve Jobs said video will never be watched on a 4-inch screen. So, I mean,
it'd be fascinating to see the data from Siri into what people are actually using it for. Because I do doubt actually that people are using it for that kind of search query. I think it's more likely, you know, people are using it to maybe initiate voice calls or
make appointments
to read out a text message. I really doubt very much currently anyway that people are using it to find information.
I think it's hilarious that he says that it's used to make phone calls. I spend about 85% of my time, if not more, on my phone, not making phone calls with it.
I think it's bravado because I don't think he can say anything else. He can't stand there and say that they really are in trouble or, yeah, they've got the real leap on us there. We've got nothing to counter. It's going to be years before we catch up. But that's really where they're coming from. And I think the thing is, you know, you look at all the things that Siri can feasibly do for you, whether you use them or not, you've got to integrate it into your life. It's like the iPad. A lot of people have got an iPad, but they don't actually use it for anything. It sits and props the door open effectively or stands a book up. But those people like me who've got an iPad and have worked out how they want to use it and who use it very regularly and very religiously, it's become a really invaluable tool. And what you're talking about in terms of the functionality of what Siri can do at the moment, even if we haven't got location data and that kind of stuff here in the UK, it's only beta. Wait till there's an SDK out there for app developers and what they think they can go and do with it. Wait until it starts tracking through applications. So, you know, you've got your... you've got your Nike application where you go running and Siri knows where you go running and Siri prompts you or it tells you to turn left or it turns right and it tells you where to run to. And then at the end of it, you say, I don't like these trainers. So it says, well, there's a shop around the corner. You go around there, they'll let you have a pair of trainers and jog out because serious runners go and try trainers before they buy them. So, you know, there's an immense opportunity for that. Once you start getting that all the dots seem to start joining up of all the integration of what the people can do with it. No?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I would be surprised if there's an SDK for app developers, though. I don't know. I get the feeling Apple's trying to keep this to itself. I don't know quite how much they're going to allow other people to ride on the back of this. Because you're right in the sense that if it can produce its own integrations in the back end and divert people to its own services, that's where their money is. If it opens up to the app developers, then it becomes, you know, it loses some of that control.
Gmail is going to have a revamp. It's going to look different when you sign in.
It already does for me.
Yeah, me.
I never signed in on the web on Gmail. I always collect it through a client.
I get mine through the email, through the web, because I've got my machine at work. And I haven't got used to it yet. Don't like it. Be fair change.
I mean, it reckons it's going to get a new look and there's going to be swishy nice pictures of grass and that kind of thing in it. But
yeah.
I got to say, the one thing I saw when I looked at the page on Engadget was the interface looks very male
sparse.
App. No, it looks very male app. The icons are very male app and that kind of stuff. I sensed a lawsuit, perhaps.
The worst thing about it is
mail.app, Apple's, you mean?
Yeah, some of the reply to all icon looks exactly the same.
Hmm.
But all those icons used to be labelled. They used to be exactly clear what they did.
It doesn't look like a bin.
Yeah, I know. I spent ages this morning looking for the move to folder thing because it's just, you know, it's a weird little icon that I just couldn't make out.
It's basically two rectangles next to each other, isn't it?
Yeah.
I got to say, I'm not sure. Nothing's changed yet, has it? Because mine looks exactly the same.
Oh, no, mine's got the new look.
Have you got
something around the bottom right hand corner saying try the new look? It's great.
Oh, switch to the new look. Now, hang on. Is there a I hate it, go back to the old look button on the left hand side when you change over?
Oh, I do hope so.
Switch to the new look, continue with the old look option.
Kill me.
The one thing I did straight away was put the compress option back on because it's got so much white space in between
email
listings. It's amazing. You get about 5 messages on a decent PC screen and you have to press compress straight away to get, you know, 15, 20 messages back on your screen.
That's display density, yeah?
Yeah, it's just in the settings at the top. It says something like compress, open, whatever. I can't remember the settings.
I haven't played with themes yet. Yeah, you've got like right. HD themes like wood and desk. I'm going to try desk.
Where are you getting themes from then?
If you go to the settings.
Lavender.
Male settings.
It looks bloody awful, honestly.
Wasabi. Oh, that's horrible. Wasabi. Green.
Yeah.
Mustard.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So I've seen the turf one. That looks quite cool.
Oh, these are horrible. These look like from Windows 95.
It does a little bit, doesn't it?
It's a tad that way, yes. Oh, yeah, it's okay. I quite like it now, then.
This one said, this theme will change depending on your location. I don't know what that means.
If you're in the lounge, it will be...
There's a theme called High Score. I don't understand any of this.
It's because we're old, mate.
I think so.
It's gone very Google Plus as well, hasn't it? So.
Oh, yeah. I like the revert to the old look temporarily.
Oh, so it's coming whether you like it or not. Bad luck. What about Google Parks? They've done stores, they've done Street View, and now they've done Park View.
Yeah.
Park I don't life. Know what that is. What is it?
That's nice.
Basically, Google Street View has gone park walking.
They've driven a car in a park. Get off my land!
I don't know whether they've driven through it or whether it's someone's walked, but there's some of the pictures of the parks that they've been along. It looks like you can't... you wouldn't get a car up there anyway, so...
I just picture like a Google car with the camera on top, just like plowing through like an open field in a park, and the police chasing down and going, "Hey, stop!"
John Deere have made a version of it. No,
so Google Street Map. I can understand the need of that. You go into a new location, you go into a particular shop or address, and you just have a look where it is, so you can recognise it when you actually get there. What's the point of the park?
Well, you can see the park before you go for a walk in it.
So you don't need to get off.
And then you get a Google weather and see if there's enough weather to fly your kite.
It'll be powering a new service called Google Tramp Spotter.
Well, the only thing that bothered me, and this is perhaps something that's very a unique British thing again, Eric, is that there's a pastime here in the UK called cottaging. And it struck me that Google Street View parks might be very useful for those people that partake of cottaging.
And indeed dogging.
Yes.
Do I dare ask, what is cottaging?
Google car park.
Yeah, Eric, ask what it is.
what is it? Do I dare ask?
Cottage. We need to Google it, don't you? I mean, it's there we go. I'm sure it's covered in Google.
Named after it. No, that's not.
Let's all watch Eric's face.
Yeah, that's going to be the best bit of audio of the night, is the pause before Eric's eruption.
No, don't say eruption.
That's probably not the best choice either, is it?
It's Jubel. It's just tried to have a whole different flavour in them.
It's the last time Barry's coming on this show now. He's got a proper career.
I have to say, Barry, you behave yourself much better.
All I can read is this. All I can say on the show is this. The term has its roots in self-contained English toilet blocks resembling small cottages in their appearance. That is from Wikipedia.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of it, yeah. There we go.
Yep.
No problem. How long, if you get caught on the Google camera, how long before you show up on the maps?
Pass.
It's not long actually at all, because some friends of mine, when they did the first pass, I think it was a matter of just a couple of months, if not less, because they were looking out for them. And obviously, it's a lot easier when Street View first came online, because it wasn't there and then it was. When it reiterates, or I don't know if the Google cars have been back since.
Oh well, no, this is the thing, because I actually went down to the shopping centre that's down the road and a few weeks back, and I took a picture of the Google car and I tweeted it out that I'd seen the Google car, and then we were walking past Ellis's school, and the Google car drove past, so I flew my arms up like, knowing that I'm going to get blurred out, but it's not appeared. So there you go.
Yeah.
How did you know it was the Google car?
Because it got Google written on the side. I'm good like that. I may be dyslexic, but even I can look at Google at speed.
I don't know if you have them in the States as well, but we have cars driving around like that all the time now, just looking for cars that haven't paid their fees recently, their parking permits.
They don't have Google written on the side, probably not.
No. Oh, okay.
They have community. Yes.
I'm just gonna paint Google on my car and then put like a weird antenna on top, and then everyone I drive by is gonna go, "Whoa! Look at me!"
It's a Mexican wave of stupidity.
All you need is a broom handle and a piece of Tupperware.
Send them into you being framed, £200 a shot, you'll be fine.
Eric, have you got Tupperware in the States?
Yes.
Was it? It probably started there, wasn't it?
Created by, I think so, Tupper. Yeah.
Was it really?
I believe so, yeah.
A bloke? Yeah, it's a guy named Tupper.
Good grief. I thought it was going to be something far more interesting than that. Is that about it?
Oh, I've had enough.
There you go. That's the end of the show then. Bugger off. See you soon. No, I don't know.
I was gonna say to Barry, you behave so much better on the PC Pro podcast.
I behave much better on the PC Pro podcast.
Maybe. How was the technology show in London, Barry?
Sorry?
How was the technology show in London that you were podcasting from?
Yeah, it was really good, actually. We had a fairly big crowd down at Excel. It was we did some live podcasts. Yeah, I think we put it out last week on the PC Pro podcast link, so you can hear from there. But yeah, really good crowd, especially on the Friday.
I wish I could have come down, because I was going on holiday though, so I couldn't, but it would have been nice to have been there. We'll have to have a Bagel Tech stand.
Yeah, Steve's boys were down there.
Yeah, I heard Carl was in there. He went out and manned the side, didn't he, and then ran off for a walk round. I always wanted to do Macworld. I wanted to take the podcast out and do it from Macworld, but it's pretty expensive. It's probably going to cost me about $5,000 to go out for the week.
Well, iWorld,
or whatever it's called.
Well, yeah, whatever it comes up. Someone was telling me about getting Paul. Is it Paul? Paul? Never mind. I'll keep that bit to myself. I might come back to it. If you support this network, then you support UK too, please. We've given away the Nintendo 3DS. Someone has won, and we've sent them an email saying congratulations, you've won, but I don't know if they've got it yet because they haven't replied. So it might be up for another draw. We never know, so you might not be off yet. If you entered the draw and you were one of the kind people who just bothered to go in and put your email address in and answer the question, thanks to UK2, you now are in possession of a voucher code which for all eternity will get you 25% off anything that you buy through the Bagel Tech site. So click on our link, go there, use your brand new offer code that gets you 25% off, and for your heart's content, you can purchase all your services from UK2 25% off just because you entered the competition where they wanted to give you a Nintendo 3DS free of charge. See, never look a gift horse in the mouth. Yeah, there you go. If you're one of the people that didn't bother to enter, well, maybe there's next year. And you can still buy your stuff with a 15% discount. Use the offer code BAGELTECH, 15% comes off your bill. And if you transfer in a domain, use BAGELDNS, and that'll get you the DNS management charge removed as well as. We are totally indebted to BAGELTECH, to UK2.net, and we would really be seriously lost without them. We've had a couple of fantastic months, lots of people subscribing to the video, loads and loads of new listeners. We did 130,000 downloads last month, so thank you ever so much to everyone that's listening. Thanks ever so much to UK2 for picking up the bandwidth on that one. Good job it's unlimited, eh? Right then, apparently we have a phenomenal cool thingy coming up in a minute, but you're gonna have to stay tuned because it's the last person to deliver it. Before that, we've got Mr. Hart. Have you got a cool thingy for us, Mr.
Hart? I've got a cool thingy.
And it's not that web camera.
No, this webcam is absolutely crap. Right. I've been looking for Android alternatives to Siri. I was pointed to one called Iris, and I'd like, if possible, to give you a brief demonstration of each of them now.
Please.
So here we go. Look, I'm going to try Iris, holding it up, and it looks basically like an iris. And then basically it uses the Google Android voice recognition and the Google voice synthesizer. So it ain't really having to do too much. Let's try this. Where can I find a cheese sandwich?
You asked, where can I find a cheese sandwich?
Well, that works well then.
Have you tried the personal ads?
Have you tried the personal ads?
We're back to cottaging.
Absolutely. So that's Iris, which of course is Siri backwards. There is
another
one. Is that
the type of thing you ask for?
Oh, absolutely. Well, isn't that what you do? Isn't that what you ask Siri? Where can I find a cheese sandwich near here?
All right, check the refrigerator.
Well, only if you want a cheese sandwich.
Exactly. Well, I often want a cheese sandwich. I wasn't going to ask for a bacon sandwich this time of night. There's another one called Skyvii, S-K-Y-V-I. And this one's quite good, actually, because this one is a little bit more... I mean, all that one basically does is Google the answer to the question. But this one, you can actually tweet with it. So let's see if this works.
You do have to ask it the same question, just to be fair.
All right, well...
We've got to have a direct comparison.
Okay, we'll do a direct comparison, and then I shall tweet something. Here we go. Where can I find a cheese sandwich?
Have you tried the personal ads?
It's exactly the same.
It's the same voice.
So I'll do a tweet anyway. Here we go. I'll do it later. Anyway, I tried to do some tweeting earlier, and it completely...
And he's frozen again. A real alternative to Siri there, I think.
I think James is drunk.
As long as you think there's some poor person who for money will do various things with cheese sandwiches in the personal ads in the local area where you live. They probably charge $50 an hour for that, or £50 an hour, so it must be worth it. James, you got anything to finish off now you're back and not frozen? No, he is frozen still. There we go, never mind. Barry, you got a cool thing for us, dude.
I really struggled this week, I've got to be honest. So the only coolish thing I found is NBA Jam on the iPad, which is an app, and it's 69p this week. And it's a pretty cool basketball game where you get to play as the NBA stars, and you get their little... It's a bit odd because you get their sort of real heads pasted on computer bodies and they play the game. But it's actually... I used to hate basketball games because it used to be run up there and score, upper end score... But this one's actually quite entertaining, and for 69p, it's a bit of a steal.
Now, is there in-app purchasing with this? Because one of the things that makes me a bit wary of EA Sports at the minute is that they've gone for this in-app purchase stuff with the Tiger Woods skill points and things. It costs you like $3.99 for $1 million.
Nope, this one is completely, it's normally $3.99, I think. But EA, if you keep a real careful eye on EA's games, never ever pay like £4, £5 for an EA game, because they just cycle them week after week. And they'll be, between 69p and 99p once a month. Yeah. So you just need to keep an eye out for them. But Tiger Woods is really rubbish as well.
Chatroom says, I'm going to ask my wife for a cheese sandwich. James has replied, wives are definitely better than Siri. Fact.
I'm going to go and ask my wife for a cheese sandwich later.
What's this?
I won't sleep well.
What's this video? How to say EA Sports?
Have you not?
Oh, he's frozen again. There we go. Steve, have you got a cool thing? I know you're a bit of a last minute addition today, so
I have, but I have to turn the lights out.
Oh,
does that work? Can you see that?
I can see you in the. Go on, yes.
So this is my my kind of cool thing, but it's not really cool. My wife wants to throw it out of the house. I'm holding to the camera it looks like glass, but if I turn it this way, it starts.
What's it doing? It's a candle.
It's a candle light.
But is it an actual live flame or is it fake?
No, it's fake. It's completely LED. Fake, and it turns on. It's an LED fake light that I think it looks nice, but my wife hates it.
Why? I thought. Now I've got to say, if you're looking for the girly vote, there's got to be a ton of. If there's any girls that listen to this, because there probably isn't, but if there's any girls that are watching, that's got bath material written all over it. I mean, back me up, fellas that are married here. Your missus wants a bath. She wants candles around the bath instead of having candles that are going to stink the place up and burn the place down. You give her half a dozen of those, she loves you to bits for Christmas. Dude, I want the address and I'm going to buy it.
You know the reason why I bought this? If you go to Amazon and go for most wished for and also most gifted in lighting, this is the number one item. And it was only £13 or £17 for three of them. And I really bought them because they're techie, because they turn on by, you twist this light candle thing by 90 degrees and it turns off and on. And the other thing, it's charging by inductive. So you just put it on a base and it charges.
Wow. So what's your wife's problem?
I mean, stupid woman.
Does she think it looks too, does it look too fake to her? Does it look too like electronic and like not like a real flame?
It
No, I've got it. He didn't buy it and give it to her as a present. That's the problem.
It looks a bit modern for our...
No.
But I like it.
Is this an over-engineering special? We've got a man asking a phone for a cheese sandwich, and Steve's bought something to replace candles that's electric.
But it looks good.
Yeah,
Steve, mate, wish you mates you throw them out, stick them in an envelope to me, and I'll give them to the wife, and I might get laid this Christmas. There we go. Eric, what have you got for us, mate? Because you've teased us, mate. You've really teased us.
I know, and I shall deliver. So... This is a success story of sheer Googling force. I had an idea about a year ago, and I was looking on iTunes or somewhere, and I thought, well, wait a minute. One of my favorite bands of all time, I forget which it was, came out with an album that I did not know about for like a year, and I was so angry. I'm like, there's got to be a way to keep track of bands and not have to go to their websites and get inundated with tweets or whatever, all these mechanisms that they would like you to do to engage with the band or with their brand or however they do it. So I Googled around, and I found a great one, and it's called Muspy. Where'd it go? I closed the window. I want to get the spelling right. Muspy, muspy.com. It is a music tracking site. You it's totally free. You build your own little profile of your favorite bands that you want to track. And then whenever they release a new album, and this works internationally, that's why I saw it said they have UK in there, so this works for you guys, it will email you a short little digest of who came out with new albums, and it covers everything, and it's been great. I woke up this morning and I saw one of my favorite bands who hasn't had an album out in years came out with one. I'm like, that's cool. That's a cool thingy.
Bucks Fizz.
Go on. Who are Bucks Fizz?
I don't think it would help if we said if they won the Eurovision Song Contest.
No, Eric, you need to type in and look for a band called Bucks Fizz. BUCKSFIZZ. See what that comes back with.
You know what? I'm going to stop Googling things just because they tell me to. This is...
No, it's not a sexual practice.
It may sound like one.
Don't combine Bucks Fizz with cottaging.
Spell
it again.
BUCK. S.
Yeah.
FIZZ.
According to Wikipedia, that's the name of a cocktail.
It is, but it's also a band. Truly amazing if you're in 1976. You need to.
Oh, then that is who they are. I'm seeing the pictures on the search result.
Right. Okay. So, have you got Bucks Fizz on your new application?
No, I do not.
Oh. Looking out for their new album, eh?
Right, that's it then. Won't be buying that. You know this is called Cool Thingy, not POS.
We haven't really done very well tonight, have we?
It's all right. We never do very well anyway.
Wait a minute. Was that directed at whoever said this band or me? You really don't like the thing that tells you when your bands come out with new albums?
Ah, right, okay.
There, we're not interested.
No, Bucks Fizz isn't going to come out with a new album.
Because they've got so many lawsuits as to who owns the name, for a start.
I saw them live last year.
Getting away from Buck Fizz or whatever this is.
You can't say that.
Muspy. You guys generally don't like Muspy?
We've never seen it before. You've recommended it. We're going to go and get it. But we were trying to give it a challenge, but the challenge was a ridiculous one because Bucks Fizz aren't going to bring out an album.
Well, if you put it in, and they did, they would know. Muspy's very good.
Ah, right. Okay, in that case, it's well worth the time and effort. Well done.
Eric, have you not heard of iTunes?
Well, no, I remember my story. I had to go on iTunes, but you can't just... But if you have, like, the top, you know, 5 to 10 bands that you like, it's impossible to keep tabs on them and see when they come out with new things. I also really would prefer not to be told, hey, new album coming out in 6 months, now 5 months, 3 months, 2 months, here's a sample, here's another sample, now it's out, 2 more weeks, pre-order. I'd rather just find out, hey, it's available. Oh, cool, I'm going to get it right now.
So is this kind of like, does it do the kind of Last FM thing where does it tell you gigs and...
That may be an option. I think there may have been a way to choose what alerts you would like it to give you about the bands, and I may have just chosen album releases, but I don't know.
Right, okay. It sounds pretty good. Not bad
at
all.
It is good. It is good. Darn it, it's a darn cool thingy. Yeah. I say so myself.
Jolly good. Right, my cool thing is kind of sad, actually. I went out with Ian Grant last night at TOIOABOA. I think, turn it off and back on again, who comes on the big show regularly. And he and I had a fantastic meal. We went to the Rither Arms, which is near Tadcaster in Yorkshire, and I ordered the 32-ounce steak. I had a kilo of meat on my plate, and it was absolutely stunning. It was a fantastic steak, well worth it. And he had a huge ribeye as well, which was great, and it didn't last long. There you go. Gone. And the reason that the things are the wrong way around is because they still haven't fixed the metadata issue on the phone camera, so when you use the thing, so that's why they're all turned on their side. But it was this fantastic meal, and you're saying, well, hang on a second, I'm well aware that cooking is pretty good for technology and that kind of thing, but why on earth have you picked it as a cool thingy? Well, the reason I picked it as a cool thingy is that the guy that owns it is a guy called Tony Linley, who was a lovely chap who we had a very long chat with. And he's got a Twitter account. It's a very modern pub, love. And it's Rither Arms, at Rither Arms on Twitter. And Rither is R-Y-T-H-R-E. And he tweets out what's on the menu and stuff and what's coming up. But he also tweets out the ingredients as well as what it's made with. And he's a great chef. And you can probably have a go at dabbling and making up his stuff. There's his picture on the thing. Lovely, lovely guy. So if you're in Tadcaster, go to the Rither Arms. It's in a little village called Rither. There's a surprise. And look him up and follow him on Twitter. And his little kind of what his starters and that kind of stuff is well worth following because he puts all the ingredients on, like I say. So you can have a little play and get creative with his recipes.
And what's his account called again?
Rither Arms, at Rither Arms. Rither is R-Y-T-H-R-E-A-R-M-S. Follow him now and send him a message and tell him he was the pick on Bagel Tech Big. There you go. He was wonderful, wonderful chap, lovely host. And the beer was nice as well. I had a beer called Blonde Bombshell. But the place I was working today had drug and alcohol testing, so I couldn't have many.
Oh, no. Good Lord.
I've got to be sober when I work. How dare they? There we go. We'll be back again next week on Thursday night as normal. We'll be back for the Daily Show in the morning, and then we've got the photo shows at 2 o'clock tomorrow now, and the Mac show is going to be at 3 or 3.30. I don't think Ellis is going to get to school because he's been off all week. So if he doesn't go to school, it's going to be at 3, not 3.30. And then it'll be the weekend, and then it'll all start again. Rugby's on as well this week. Two lots of rugby. Superb. Where can we get a hold of you, chaps, James? You can get James at Syzygy, S-Y-Z-Y-G-Y on Twitter. And
no, wait, he's still thinking. He's still thinking.
Oh, he's thinking. I do apologise.
He's asking his phone.
James, how much do you need for a new web camera? I'll send it you. I should get one off eBay and it's yours, bud. And he's frozen again.
Internet connection, I think.
And he's got probably loads of web pages, and he's got loads of music stuff as well, so well worth listening to. Barry, where can we get you, mate?
Ideally, you can get me on the newsstand in W.H. Smith's or your local supermarket.
Oh, of course, it's the week before you publish.
But failing that, at pcpro.co.uk.
No worries, mate. Well done. And there's a great blog post from me, if I hadn't pushed it out on my own webpage. Bugger.
Yeah, we may be able to do something about that, actually.
Oh, so, but hey! Yeah. All right, cool. See the SEO police. Let me know. Steve, thank you very much, mate. I mean, you stepped in at 11th hour this afternoon, so and you came as Guy Fawkes as well, as with face all blacked up and everything.
I'm a candle.
And your candle. The candle's awesome, mate. Your wife has lost it completely.
Yeah, but it's CloughEdHQ on Twitter, or if you're in London and fancy coming down for a beer, London Mac User Group, and there's a meeting coming up, lmug.org. On the website, you'll find the exact date. I can't remember now, but it's I think it's a week on Monday.
Brilliant. Yeah, we'll do that. There's a technical one coming up, isn't there, soon?
Yeah, that's the following Monday. So next
A week on Monday is the normal meeting. The following week after is the developer meeting.
I know I'm not welcome at that technical one because I read the title and didn't know what it was talking about.
I've got no idea what they talk about either. I still go. I just sit in the corner and drink beer, I think.
Okay, right. Well, I can do that.
Yeah, I'm practiced.
Yeah, yeah, I've done that before. And last but by no means least, the man who actually... Where were you when Eric Lanigan had a pick 2 weeks running? You only did a pick last...
Well, I was right here.
Well, yeah, you only did a pick last week because you were hosting, though. You couldn't. You'd have been shamed forever to have hosted the show and then not had a pick.
What did I pick? Did I have a pick?
I've got no clue. Yeah, you did have a pick. I think you did have a pick. I watched the show and I didn't notice that you didn't have a pick. See, it was that memorable. Was it the Steve Jobs autobiography again?
I have no idea what the pick was. I have no recollection of that.
Well, on a serious note, actually, with the picks.
Did I host
stuff,
last week? What happened?
Yeah, yeah, you host. Yeah, there was. It was.
Where have I been?
It was on one
what
of the
day is this?
One of the four Tuesdays that we have in the week.
Yes.
No, we'll. What was I going to say? I've got no idea what I was going to say. I've completely forgotten. There we go.
Oh, twitter.com/EricLanigan, ericlanigan.com/EricLanigan, youtube.com/EricLanigan, LinkedIn/EricLanigan, ericlanigan.
Beautiful.
E-I-E-I-O.
Get up in the mirror in the morning and practice that.
Practice spelling my name, yes.
It doesn't come naturally.
E-R-I-C. Oh, damn it.
We have got to
start
do...
again.
We've got to do a transatlantic podcast, mate. 10 minutes. Just record it one off, no editing. And we'll pick a subject at random. We'll just turn up and talk about it for 10 minutes. The differences between our brotherhoods.
Yes.
East and West, definitely. We'll do that. Just you and me, mate. So we need some title suggestions. There we go. Eric and Ewan talking about USA versus UK. Bring us up with some show titles and we'll get it done. We'll see you next week. Have a great weekend. Thanks ever so much for coming.